Live from Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. It was a little foggy and chilly this morning, but we'll take it. The past 3 weeks of extraordinary weather has perhaps changed our perspective of comfortable or bearable while longing for sunshine. And while some overdue dry and sunny conditions are forecasted this week, there is still significant damage, cleanup, and loss. The series of atmospheric rivers forced the evacuations of tens of thousands of residents and claimed at least 20 lives. And although our snowpack and overall precipitation totals is well above average for this time of year, there are learning lessons about getting current emergency information out to the public and the shortcomings about the technology that we rely on daily. Dr. Jeffrey Mount is a senior fellow at the Public Policy Institute of California and experienced this firsthand, as did many of us, and joins us now. Good morning, Dr. Mount. Jeffrey.
Vicky, thanks. Nice to be here.
So you typically join us about all things water, infrastructure to storage, flood control, and of course, drought, which was actually our last conversation on Insight.
Correct.
And you emailed me at the start of the new year as we began these series of atmospheric rivers about reminding me how the disaster memory half-life is short. So I guess reminding me about all of the what we were in for, we didn't really know what we were in for. How do you reflect on the past 3 weeks?
Well, I can tell you, as somebody who loves watching weather and rivers and all the rest of the stuff that I do, that was a really fun 3 weeks for me, until it wasn't. And I can pretty much say that's the case for most people here. That was an extraordinary but not unprecedented 3 weeks in precipitation in California. What was so striking about it, Vicky, was the fact that it was everywhere. Everywhere got wet in California. That's not that common. And some of our really, really big years, it's everywhere. But I think the signature of this one was not so much, and this may be relative to our conversation today, it was not so much that it rained hard, it blew like heck. And we had significant damages, not just in the Bay Area, not just out here, but also even in Southern California. And it was associated with the punch of the weather, not just the precipitation.
You know, during the series of storms, you know, I had a Facebook memory or multiple back in 2017 and reporting a flooding. You know, in South Sacramento, where I was covering, also just watching the Yolo Bypass filling up to look like a choppy lake. And that was 5 years ago. So how does that compare to what we've just went through now in 2023?
So 2017 is a lot like what we just went through. As you know, that was the year, depending on where you were, that was record precipitation, but it started about this time, but it continued on into the spring. The storm door didn't slam shut like it did last year in early January. So this was similar to 2017, but for old hands like us, I've lived in the Valley for 42 years, this was really more reminiscent of 82 and 83, which were years that had, you know, tremendous soakings that occurred, but also really big winds, surprisingly high winds, which caused widespread damage, mostly from falling trees. So 2017 didn't have that as much as we had this one. And also 2017 was a bit warmer. I think in the end, at the end of the year, we're going to look back at this particular series of storms as being just cold enough that we socked away a massive snowpack. I mean, really, it's very impressive. I mean, there are places that got 77 inches of liquid precipitation, which is a mind-boggling amount. And of course, if you've been up to the Sierras, you know, it's really an extraordinary pile of snow up there.
Yeah. And for anyone, they probably shouldn't have tried to brave, you know, passing through I-80. It was just like whiteout conditions. Yeah. Caltrans was sending videos that looked like photos because everything was
just white
and at a standstill.
Yeah.
So what was interesting this time, Jeffrey, was that you also wrote about how crisis communication suffers during natural disasters. And this was following your personal experience during everything that we just went through. At what point were you like, I need to write about my experience?
Well, I want to make perfectly clear, my wife and I did not suffer. There are people who genuinely suffered during all of this. But it was the moments of looking at each other going, we've lost all communication. We have no way to communicate. And admittedly, I'm somebody who's a nerd and wants to follow every detail. But also, should I be concerned? And how do I protect myself? And we had zero communication. Vicky, should I tell you, I'll give you this story. And again, remember, I'm making this lighthearted when, in fact, it was serious business for lots of people. But my wife and I had been up at our place in the Sierras weekend before last when we really got blasted here in Sacramento. And we got to see firsthand the damage as we came through Sacramento and south of Sacramento with telephone poles snapped in half. I mean, that's tornado force winds that do that kind of thing. And we said, this is extraordinary. Power had been out at our house in Davis, but it had come back on by the time we were there. So everything's good, right? Zero internet. Cell phones didn't work. We were getting nothing. And so that then the two things that happened that I noticed that we're really good friends, my wife and I, we were kind of snippy with each other because we couldn't communicate with the rest of the world, which we found very amusing afterwards. But then it began to dawn on me how much things have changed since I've been here in the Valley. So what did I used to do? I used to, when times like this, I would go to the old standby. So I'd get out the battery-operated AM radio. I went. Tried to find out what was going on, and there was nothing available. It was either talk radio, sports, or radio in which I didn't understand the language, which highlights a real challenge in disaster communication.
Language barriers.
Oh, we are such a diverse community here. How do you communicate with those people? So that was no good. Then I went to my favorite standby, television. Oh, wait a minute. I'm hooked up. I like most people in the area, have given up on my rabbit ears.
Yeah.
And now do it on – I use the internet. So that was zero, and I couldn't get anything there. And by the way, I tried to tune into you, and you guys were off the air.
Yeah, for a period, we were.
Yeah,
I mean,
so there
because
was
very significant.
Nothing. Wait, there's always the landline, right? And so I went to the landline, and my wife and I laughed about this because just 2 months ago we disconnected it, like so many people, because landlines are self-powered. So they work, but not if you've disconnected it. And right now the FCC is trying to push really hard for everybody to disconnect their landlines and just go with basically fiber optic cable, which is your internet. And I thought, what's happening throughout Sacramento to people who – this is crazy. So then finally I got in the car and drove across town where I got a cell signal. And sure enough, what do I check? Facebook? Twitter? Well, only 1 in 5 Americans are on Twitter. So that's no good, except I noticed some counties using Twitter to send out their emergency. So it really was pretty bad. The good news is, let me make this, there's a bright side to this. Every county in California now has an emergency system, and they're relying on basically texts. So if the problem is, you have to opt in. You know, it's not.
You do have to sign up.
Sign up for it. So there's a really good one for Sacramento, Yolo, and Placer County, but you got to sign up for it. But all you get there is an emergency. You don't get information. And my belief strongly in crisis communication is it's more than just a get out of the way alert, runaway alert. You really need a broad amount of information. I used to sit on the flood board here in Central Valley before I was fired by Arnold Schwarzenegger, terminated by the Terminator, as I tell people. it was for saying we probably shouldn't be putting houses behind these levees. That's why I was fired. But there, we spent most of our time worrying about response, preparation, and response in emergency saves lives. So it dawned on me we're on a funny trend here that might be worth thinking about again. And as I say, our cell was knocked out, completely knocked out. So we didn't get cell for 3 days.
Yeah, and learning it the hard way. I mean, I was even thinking as a journalist, I mean, I was able to stay updated, but I knew where to go on social media. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I am on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook. Who to follow in addition to getting press releases from agencies. But there wasn't really a one-stop shop.
Nope.
To get this info to residents, especially if you have like Apple TV or Roku, and that's completely down, so you can't even watch local TV stations.
Correct. And I want to add to this. It turns out there is no standard system of emergency broadcasts. Each county is doing their own thing. And some of them, if I went and did an informal survey of them, some are just perfectly awful to try and sign up for. And of course, you have to give an address. You can't just say, I'd like to be on this emergency broadcast system. So this highlighted something I know in talking with colleagues that people in the emergency response world worry a lot about, that we are undergoing these big changes as people are turning off their landlines, turning off their TV. They're talking about no longer having AM radio in new cars, for example. I mean, so as that begins to slide away, what are we doing in terms of broadcasting information? And let me say, what's most important, it's not just a runaway announcement. It's information about what's taking place and what's unfolding. Highway 99 is closed now, right, because of flooding. And, you know, how do you find that out? Well, there was a billboard as I drove in this morning that said 99 was closed. Unfortunately, you guys here at CAP Radio are telling people. But if communications are down all over the place, how do you get information? And I think that's a key. I have friends who didn't have power for more than 6 days. And what do you do during that?
Especially if the only kind of reliable, you know, and I say that kind of loosely, way of communicating is cell service, because cell service and data get strained when everyone is using their mobile phones.
Oh, I agree. And my neighborhood is a classic, which is, you know, upper middle class neighborhood in Davis. And so many of them, I actually met neighbors I've never met before. And the first question was always, do you have internet? can I have it? But the second was they had their cell phone in their hand and they were trying to use their cell phone to basically communicate. And it was a tragedy of the commons. So even when the cell tower was working again, the locals crushed it by demand. So there was nothing you could do. You could make a phone call, but that was it.
Given that you look at these issues through the lens of solutions from a policy perspective, what can be done to improve these disconnects that you're talking about ahead of the next natural disaster? It may not be a series of storms. It can be a plethora of things.
Well, I'm actually far more worried about an earthquake. And we know exactly what happened in Paradise, the fire in Paradise. And was that 27 people died? A lot of that
for more than 80.
I'm sorry, I'm mixing them up. But that was a failure to communicate. And so I think this is probably worth something for the legislature to sit down and think about. And they did after those. But, you know, there were hearings. I don't remember that there was great advances in policy. But we need a better communication system since we're switching almost entirely to cell phones for communication. So what do we do? How do we do it? I mean, I have an array of ideas. You don't have that much time. I think this is worth a second look. And it probably is a good idea for the legislature to sit and take a second look at it and gets at least some uniformity in that communication throughout the state so that if I'm in San Joaquin County, I am getting notified and of what's going on, not just run away. But what's going on?
Yeah, because we're all connected. It's not these
right.
Borders are pretty much invisible when you're right. Going from Sacramento to Yolo to San Joaquin and in Placer counties.
Yeah, we have this other problem, which we have to worry about, is a lack of trust in government, but government ultimately has to be the source of this emergency management. And I think we'll look back at some of the deaths that took place during this as people who just simply ignored warnings. For whatever reason, they ignored warnings and they died in the process. So, again, that communication is critical. I did dig out some of the literature on this. That communication, the breakdown in communication in Katrina, Hurricane Katrina, was a solid source of the hundreds of deaths there. People just didn't know what to do.
And the flood risk in the Sacramento-San Joaquin Valleys is comparable to the flood risk in Katrina. What took place?
It was. Sacramento was the next Katrina. And I do have to say, I have to compliment the people at the Sacramento Area Flood Control Agency, along with their partners at the Army Corps of Engineers, Bureau of Reclamation, Doris Matsui. There's just all these people came together after Hurricane Katrina. I mean, that was a real wake up and have put immense efforts into trying to reduce flood risk here. Flood risk is still high because you keep building homes behind those levees, the very thing I got terminated by the Terminator for complaining about. but it is so much better than it was 20 years ago.
How are our levees holding up? We have thousands of miles of levees.
Oh, we do indeed. I mean, just there's more than 1,700 miles in just the Sacramento-San Joaquin flood control system. There's 1,100 miles in the Delta alone. And then there are thousands of miles that we don't even know about in the valley. And I will tell you that in general, things held up well. The Casumnes was not a surprise to anyone because those are not levees that are intended to protect people's homes. Those are what you'd think of as rural agricultural levees, and they failed, and it was expected. I mean, it really kind of I don't say it was no surprise. There was more water in the Casumnes than was predicted, but those when you in Michigan Bar, when you get to those levels, you know you're going to have levee failures downstream. But the rest of the system held together very well. I do want to point out, though, you had two giant empty holes in the ground, which we can call Shasta Reservoir and Oroville, that are still filling, and they're releasing nothing out of them. And that made a huge difference on the Sacramento side, the amount of water coming down. But as I drove in today to see you, it was glorious to see the Yolo Bypass water from levee to levee, moving down at not a lot of water, but a modest amount of water moving down the Yolo Bypass. That's what it's designed for. So the system did well. Again, it really helped having two empty reservoirs.
If it becomes the norm that we have these series of back-to-back atmospheric rivers, how will this impact water storage and flood control in California? As you mentioned, I mean, there was no one in California that was left unscathed from this wet weather the first 2 weeks and plus of 2023.
Well, I'll also point out that there will hardly be anybody in California who won't benefit from this. I mean, so even though this was an awful lot of water to choke down, it really helps in terms of water supply. But this highlights something that we don't like to talk much about. That is our big reservoirs. We got an illustration of this with Folsom. Folsom has to set aside a very large reserve to protect Sacramento downstream for flooding, so they have to let water out. And so they've been madly letting water out of Folsom, less so now, to try and keep space for managing floods. Had Shasta and Oroville, had we had a normal year or a wet year last year, they would have been pretty full coming into this season, and they would be full now, and they would be having to let their water go. And this is this constant tension between reservoir storage and flood control. Here's the good news, as far as I'm concerned. I was emailing with colleagues last night. Helen Dahlke at UC Davis is probably the smartest mind on groundwater recharge in the valley. And the numbers are huge about the amount of water that went into groundwater. So through no effort on our part other than empty fields, a whole lot of water went into groundwater. And I remind you, a third of our supply on average comes from groundwater, and two-thirds during a drought comes from groundwater. So this was for water, this was great. It was also really good for the environment, by the way. I mean, it just did wonderful things for fish and birds. That's the silver lining. Now, if you got damaged by it, you got hurt, I mean, again, the punch of these storms was really amazing to watch. I mean, literally, a telephone pole snapped in half. That's a vision we normally have when we look at tornadoes. Mm-hmm. So that's what it is. But the bottom line for you, Vicki, is for all of us, is that these atmospheric rivers are getting bigger. I'm not sure how much bigger they were this time around, creating a greater and greater challenge to try and store them when we're also trying to keep them out of our houses. That's the big challenge.
And that keeps your job very interesting, Jeffrey.
One would refer to what I do as a target-rich environment. there's always something to talk about.
Which is why you're a regular here. Jeffrey, thanks so much for stopping by.
Lovely to be here.
Dr. Jeffrey Mount is a senior fellow at the Public Policy Institute of California. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.